Well, I'm so excited to be able to do some learning together here. And some of you I've learned with before, some of you I haven't. And so some of you know, some of you don't know that I'm finishing a book on the weekday Amida, because I wanted it to be a bestseller. So I chose weekday Amida. And it's basically an analysis of every bracha in the weekday Amida using a method that I have been teaching for many years, which is connecting the words of the Siddur to the words of the Tanakh and seeing what emerges when you sort of hold those texts up together. And so this is actually a piece of that work, but it's not really a textual piece, although there is a textual element that we'll probably get to at the end. But it's really the question of how do you move into the Amida itself? That is to say, if you're prepping for the experience of the Amida, how does one take one's body into that space? And you're probably familiar with the practice of stepping forward in the Amida, or perhaps stepping back three steps and then stepping forward three steps. We're going to look at that variation of the practice. But this is something that I find myself drawn to because my original interest in thinking about the Amida was more about the body movements than about the words. And then I sort of got into the words. But the body movements are unusual for the Amida. Like, they have certain prescribed moments. You know, the Shema is, you know, b'shiftecha b'veitecha v'latecha v'aderech. Like, you can do it however you want, basically, even though we tend to have aligned with a certain set of practices. But the Amida, by its name, is standing, and your body is oriented, your voice is regulated, you're meant to whisper, not be out loud, you're meant to bow, which is unusual in Jewish prayer, at least rabbinic prayer. And so the stepping is a part of that. And that's what I was interested in. I'm going to walk us through a few different ways of looking at the stepping with an attempt to sort of say, like, here's a bunch of offerings and you take what you want and see which one resonates with you. I will try to make some meaning out of it, but also you are all rabbinic adults and you know how to make your own meaning, so I'm hopeful that there'll be some ingredients here for meaning as well. Okay, let's just start a little bit with the historical grounding of the practice. So we often think, or I often think of the stepping into the Amida as parallel to the stepping out of the Amida at the end of the prayer. But the truth is, the stepping out of the Amida is something that is already mentioned in the Talmud, but the stepping in is something that only originates in the school of Rashi. So it's not a practice that anyone is doing with any reported instance before, you know, the 11th, 12th century in Ashkenaz. And we'll see a variety of different sort of contemporaries at that time who bring their own meaning to the practice. But it's something that emerges only after the Talmud, as opposed to that stepping out. And you mentioned the royal aspect of this. The stepping out is associated with that, you know, the presence of God and perhaps the royal presence of God and taking your step away from that. I'll tell you a story about that in a second. But the stepping in is something that, although it makes total sense the way we do it now as a perfect parallel to the stepping out, it's not something that emerges for like 500 or 600 years after the reporting of the stepping out. I was once in Copenhagen, and there is a monarchy in Denmark. I knew nothing about Denmark, but there's a monarchy there. And you could go to, at the time, the queen of Denmark was still on the throne. I think she is no longer, or she abdicated or something. Something went on with her. Anyways, but we went into the throne room, and they had this very elaborate design on the floor. And the throne was, like, right, you know, to the other side of it. And what you could see in the design, the tour guide pointed this out to us, was that there was, among all the intricacies of the design on the floor, there was a straight line that went from the door to the throne. And basically, the purpose of the line was so that you, without turning your back on the queen, you could back up out the door simply by following the line that you were sort of oriented to. And so I was like, oh, the idea of backing away from a royal figure is not limited, of course, to our own tradition, but it's something that even happens up until today. Okay, so what is the text that's really the anchor point for the stepping forward? Is this amazing text from sort of a not well-known rabbi from the Talmud, Amar Rav Chanan bar Bizna, Amar Rav Shimon Chasida. chasida, chasid, pious. Hamid palel, you know, tefillah and li palel almost always means say the Amida in rabbinic text. Hamid palel, tzarich sheyir e'atzmo, ki ilu shechina kenegdo. You need to see yourself as if, ki ilu, as if the shechina is across from you, is opposite you. Shene emar, shiviti Adonai lenegdi tamid. Now, shiviti Adonai, I have placed Hashem opposite me, tamid, always. Now, why that is the proof text for the Amida, it's not totally clear, although I do think there is some work with the word tamid here, right? Because tamid meaning always, but we don't say the Amida always, although there is an opinion from Rabbi Yochanan, halavai shipalel adam kol hayom kulo. I wish I could say the Amida all day long. So there's sort of like an ideal of, if everything else being equal, I would prefer to be in Amida all day long. So maybe that's the original function of tamid, but tamid also means the tamid sacrifice that the Amidas, at least in one system, is parallel to. And so shiviti Adonai linegdi, I place God before me, tamid, when I'm in the tamid operative prayer space, which is to say during the Amida, the Amidah space for the I'm pro Musaf, but if you're anti Musaf, the Tamid situation doesn't work that well for Musaf. So you got something there. So okay, so how might you see yourself as if shiyre atzmo ki'ilu? See yourself as if the Shekhinah is opposite you. It's not that the Shekhinah is opposite you. I mean, there's another text that says the Shekhinah is above you when a minion comes to pray. But how might you see yourself as if the Shekhinah is opposite you? Okay, so one thing about the stepping is that you are entering into the presence of the Shekhinah, which is not something that you can simply conjure up without taking a movement forward. And so we get this from Sefer HaManhig. This is Avram Ibn Ayarchi, who is a Provençal rabbi, again, sort of from the general sort of school of Ashkenaz, but he's living in a crossroads area, so he writes down all the minhagim that he sees. So it's called Sefer HaManhig. And he says as follows, Bala lihitpalel, when it's time for you to say the Amida, Yelech shalosh pisiot lefanav, you walk three steps forward, Leharot lefanav mishalosh machanot, Machane Yisrael, Machane Leviyah, and Machane Shechina. So what you do when you walk forward, according to Manhig, is you are crossing through three camps. You are starting in Machane Yisrael, as every Jew has access to that. But then, if you think of the camps as they're organized in the desert, right, where the center of the camp is the Kodesh Kodeshim, as it were, and you are crossing into the Machane Leviyah, the place where the Levites are, until you cross past the Levite section, and then you're in Machane Shekhinah, that is to say, the camp where the Shekhinah actually dwells. The presence of God exists, because although Melokh Ol Haaretz Kvodo, even though God's glory fills the entire universe and all the land, there are certain places like, you know, you're all my children, but you are my favorites. You know, it's like, I am everywhere, but I am really here. And if you could just get a little closer to where I am extra present, then you might be seeing yourself, Shiviti Adonai Lenegdi, opposite the Shekhinah, in a place where you are not actually, as a Yisrael, not permitted to go, but nevertheless, you're going there. Okay, let's just add one other layer here, because that's the camp in the desert. But then you have, already going back to the Tosefta, Keshem Shayu Bamidbar Shalosh Machanot, Machane Shekhinah, Machane Leviyah, Machane Yisrael, just like you had those camps in the desert. So too in Yerushalayim, and this is sort of what you were getting at with the Ezrat Nashim, and where it's very, very sort of regimented and strictly controlled, you have these three districts essentially on the Temple Mount or headed towards the Kodesh Kodashim. Mipetach Yerushalayim ve'at petach harabayit Machane Yisrael. This is your, are you in the middle or are you at the edge? Mipetach harabayit vadshar nikanor, Machane Leviyah, so you get up to that gate, the Nicanor gate, and then that's the Levi district. And Mishar Nicanor Velifnim, Machane Shekhinah. That's the place where it's restricted access. And yet, so it's sort of like we both have the desert imagery, but also the temple imagery. And in the temple, everybody would, you know, throng the districts where they were allowed, But the idea that a czar could just run up to the Kodesh Kodeshim, it's like, forget it, you get zapped. No question. So this is like subversive in that way. I wanted to add one other space that has different camps that has, I think, a danger element to it, which is, of course, you've got the camp in the desert, you've got the temple in Jerusalem, and then you also have, as we just read, the Sinai itself, the giving of the law, has certain camps, which is itself, you know, sort of a rerun of the camps that we get later on, or a precursor, rather. So there you have three camps, and they are also about certain types, not physical borders per se, but types of darkness. So if you flip over to page 2, the reason, so Kaf HaChayim, which is much, much later, 19th century, we'll get to this a little bit later, but already quoting the Kitzur Shla, not sure how much that's related to the Shla himself, the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, Kabbalist. The reason we take three steps forward before reciting the Amida is because of the verse, Choshech Anan Va'arafel. Choshech Anan Va'arafel, these three descriptions of the cloud that Moses passed through when receiving the Ten Commandments. And that's also the reason why at the end of the Amida, we take three steps back to go backwards through those three sections. So what are the three sections? Choshech Anan Va'arafel. So it says, Moshe Nigash El Ha'arafel, we get in the Shemot giving of the Ten Commandments. And then taking the text from Devarim, that's the Choshech Anan Va'arafel. So the idea that Moses passes through three precincts on the mountain, three areas of darkness, is already an old midrash, meaning going back already to Michelta. The idea that we would imitate Moshe by doing that in the stepping of our Amida is not something that you get until hundreds of years later. So that is just, but to your point around the danger side, like what does God say? If you get if any of you break through the barriers on Sinai, right? Sakol yisakel o yaroi yoreh, you'll either get like whacked with a stone or shot with a something. I don't know. They had some defense mechanism that was up there on Sinai. You can't step that close. Only Moses. And as we know, even for Moshe, like the angels were out to get him. It was like a dangerous activity to get the law. And yet here we are, according to our later authorities, making that same journey, going through Choshech, step one, Anan, and Arafel. And now we're in this sort of like dark, enveloped space in which we encounter God's presence, just like Moshe Rabbeinu did as well. Now let's break it down a little bit further. So this is, if you're going to sort of set up an image association with the stepping, this is a set of images, the walking forward through the camps or through the mountain, through the temple. What if you're going to break it down further to each step? And you already alluded to this, Ethan. So we read in the Shulchan Aruch, V'yesh omrim, k'she omeid lihipalel, yeilech lefanav shalosh psiot. So notice, it's just there's a practice. Some say you take these steps before the Amida, indicating what? Derech keruv v'hagasha l'davar shetzarich la'asot. It's in the manner of drawing close, like karov, and approaching, v'yigash, coming closer, to something that you actually need to do. Now, the Shulchan Aruch is deriving this from a comment of the Rokeach. Rokeach is a 12th century German mystic, Hasidei Ashkenaz, okay, who writes an amazing commentary on the Sidur. As an aside, there's a new publication from Mosad Rav Kook called Sidur Torat Chaim. If you ever had the Chumash Torat Chaim, where they put all the commentators like Rashi, Ibn Ezra, Ramban, all on one page, like a better version of Mikra Gedolot, just from easier on the eyes and the footnotes, etc. So they did it with this Sidur. It's called Sidur Torat Chaim. I highly recommend picking it up. It's in two volumes, and you've got all your medieval commentaries on the Sidur, which are not that many. It's like five or six, but the Rokeach is one of them. And each of these was published as their own separate books like over the last 70 years, but now you can get them all in one-stop shopping, and the notes are excellent. It's a little pricey. It's like $50, but I think it's totally worth it. And so the Rokeach is one of the medievals who writes a full-length commentary on the Sidur. A lot of what he does, because he's a Hasidei Ashkenaz, is he counts letters and words. So you want to know what the esoteric meaning of this, you know, we're talking about three. You want to know, he's got about 25 reasons why there are 18 blessings in the Amidah. All these different significant, you know, understandings of the word 18, some of which are from Midrash, some of which he seems to come up with on his own. He does an analysis of all the letters, how many letters are there in this bracha, how many words are there in this bracha. And if you're like, but wait a minute, I'm saying this bracha too, and the number of words that he's reporting and the number of words that I see are not the same, the answer to that is simple, is your version is wrong. Because Hasidei Ashkenaz were real big on, we've got the right version of the Sidur, and if there's any divergence from what we have, it's a shibush that's your fault. So anyways, he does a lot of that mystical work, but he also has like a straight up commentary on the words as well. So this is his connection here, which you mentioned, Ethan. So kshechpotz lipalel, when it's time to pray, when you want to pray, yilech levanav gimel psiot, shekatuv gimel hagashot litfila. It's written, and we'll see, it's written in the Midrash's reading of the Bible, is that there were three examples of hagasha, meaning the word vayigash, to approach, represented tefillah in three different places, and he gives you the examples: Vayigash Avraham, Vayigash Yehuda, and Vayigash Eliyahu. Okay, that's all he says in his commentary, which is to say, each of the steps of the stepping forward in the Amidah is related to the fact that one of our ancestors took one of those steps. Okay, now do we read all three steps as either Abraham or Jacob? Or Eliyahu, or is each step, this step is Abraham, this step is Jacob, and this step is Eliyahu, that is a little bit open for us to play around with. But let's just remind ourselves what those hagashot are. What would it mean to step in the steps of Abraham in this moment, of Yehuda in this moment, and of Eliyahu in this moment? And how might that help us understand what the Amidah that we're about to do is? We're doing something shetzarich la'asot, davar shetzarich la'asot. We're doing something that needs to be done right now. This is not just free time activity. This is like an urgent, necessary moment. And that's what tefillah is. Okay. Vayigash Avraham, vayomar ha'af tispet tzadikim rasha. In the story in the argument of Sodom. Now, we're talking about chutzpah, right? This is a great Avraham chutzpah moment. Vayigash Avraham vayomar, Avraham draws near, and that's the word that the Rokeach is latching onto. That's the step, the approach. And he says, he doesn't say Adonai Elohim, he doesn't say, you know, Elohai, he doesn't say anything. He literally just starts with the exclamation point, like, Haf, are you really going to do this? Okay, then you have the Yehuda, you also alluded to this, the Yehuda scene, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Elav meaning to Yosef, here, not knowing that it's his brother, at least according to Pshat, and he is a royal figure, meaning a king or king-like, so that's similar to the Amidah. And then the language here is not Ha'afti Spet Tzadikim Rasha, but rather, Bi Adoni, Yedaber Na'avdecha, Davar Bozne Adoni, Val Yichar Abcha Be'avdecha. It's very supplicatory, right? Please, right, na can mean now, but also bevakasha, be, I'm your eved, you know, don't get angry, right? So there's a much more docile or nervous, this is the Esther model, right? I don't know how this is going to go. I'm not even really supposed to talk to you. You're a different, like, level. And then the last one, the Eliyahu one, is when he's fighting with the priest of Baal, and, you know, after the whole Baal, you know, thing isn't working, and he's, you know, maybe, why don't you yell a little bit louder? Maybe Baal can't hear you. You know, this is like a great Jewish moment. So then it's time for him to do his thing, and he douses the sacrifice in water because, you know, this is Broadway. And va'ibalot amincha va'igash Eliyahu Hanavi va'yomar. This is what he says after he approaches. Very simple. Adonai Elohei Avraham Yitzhak v'Yisrael. This also should be noted when we say in our Amidah, all right, Avraham Yitzhak v'Yaakov, you could have quoted Eliyahu, but we don't quote Eliyahu. We quote, Exactly, Elohe, which is how it's written in Burning Bush. Hayom yivada ki ata Elohim b'Yisrael v'ani avdecha. This is the day when you will be known. Finally, Israel is going to figure it out. And then he says, aneni Adonai, aneni. This is his plea. Just answer me. That's what I want. What am I coming to do? I'm coming to ask you to answer me. Give me a tshuva. Give me an oneh, right? Ma'aneh. And they will know, as a result of you answering me, then everyone will know that you are God. And how does it all end? What do the people say at the end? Adonai Hu Elohim, which you should read as this. Adonai Hu Elohim. Oh, it's Yudevave who's Elohim, not Baal Hu Elohim. Now I got it. So that's the result of Eliyahu's intervention there. And that's also, to me, I take this away of like the aneini Adonai aneini. Like, I just really want to be answered in this moment. I'm not coming to you with a justice claim. I'm not coming to you with an admission of guilt necessarily. It's just, there's something I need and I want you to answer me. Yeah. So you can see in the Midrash, which the Rokeach is basing himself, there's different versions of this Midrash. And there's another Vayigash, which also may not be helpful, which is the Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm in the bottom box on number three. So Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemiah, and Rabbanan disagree about what is Vayigash, meaning working off of Vayigash Yehuda Elav in Parshat Vayigash. So Rabbi Yehuda says it's approaching for war, like Yoav, Vayigash Yoav ve'am asher imo la'milchama, which is not in this three-way debate. Avram isn't there, but you could graph that on to the Avram position. Like, afti spetz, I'm like, I'm here to fight, okay? It's a vayigash la'milchama. I'm coming at you. So Rabbi Nechemiah says approaching means persuasion, pius, as it says in Joshua, and there, this is another story of vayigshu b'nei Yehuda al Yehoshua, the children of Judah drew near to Joshua to persuade him. This is about the dividing of the land. And Rabbanan say that it's the Eliyahu one, hagashah l'tfilah. Tfilah here meaning supplication. Request, right? The basic meaning of tefillah is the center of the Amidah, which is to say, bakasha, right? So Eliyahu has like a basic bakasha, I want you to answer me. That's how I'm playing it out. So if you graph this back onto the stepping, each of the stepping could be another orientation, right? Maybe la milchama, maybe la pius, maybe la tefillah, that is to say, la bakasha. And each of the steps is like, I'm bringing it all together in my Amida. Or maybe it's my time to figure out what's my orientation in this specific Amida. Am I choosing one or the second or the third? And that's how I'm going to sort of orient my, you know, emotional resonance around the words. We'll do one more on this threesome. So Rabbi Elazar Omer, top of page 4. Amar lo Yehuda. Muchan ani li shlosha dvarim halalu. I am ready. When Yehuda approaches Yosef, he's ready for anything. Im lipius are yafeh, right? If I can persuade you, great. Im litfilah, if it's about request, when I have to really press my case and ask you, not argue with you, not persuade you. Ani mevakesh mimcha. So I'm going to do that. I will request from you. But im lamilchama, if this is going to be a fight, amod kenegdi, vani amod kenegdecha, which is a very different way of thinking. Shiviti adonai lenegdi tamid. So, yeah, exactly. Diplomacy first, and then I'm ready. So, in Rebbe Elazar's understanding of this, it's like the I'm thinking about each of these. Not each step is its own, but rather, I'm ready for. This is going to be one quality. Our interaction is going to determine the quality that I'm choosing. And that is another way of thinking about the Amidah. But if none of these qualities, you know, floats your boat, I have one other one, which is Rabbi Yehuda says, Vayigash, another place Vayigash shows up in Torah, he says is Lashon Ahava, because in the scene where Yitzchak is giving the bracha to his children, or to one child and the other, Vayigash Vayishaklo, right? Jacob draws near and he kissed him, meaning the result of drawing near is a kiss. And so there's like a love undercurrent of the approaching. All right, I promised you Moshe. So let's see Moshe. So this is me, but I like what I did. Okay, so when Moshe has the encounter at the burning bush, how does it all start? Vayomer Moshe, Asura na ve'er'eh et ha'mare'a gadol hazeh, madua lo yivarasneh. So when Moses approaches the burning bush, the sneh, which, by the way, just etymologically, the Midrash already points this out, sneh, which we translate as bush, but clearly is evocative of Sinai, right? So it's not just the Hara Elohim, which makes it also obvious, but the sneh is the mini Sinai. So this is Moses' precursor to the full revelatory experience that happens, you know, in chapter 20. And then, but it all starts off by Moshe saying, Asura na ve'eres. Rabbi Yochanan says, Gimel psiot pisa Moshe ba'ota sha'a. Three steps Moses took in that moment. Shene emar, Asura na ve'eres. Right? Each step is correlated to a word. And therefore, I turn aside, na, now, let's say, and I will go look. And that turning aside now and examining is what leads him to the sneh. And this is something that Moshe redounds to his benefit in the Midrash. That is to say, the act of turning aside and then following it up with a question, which is, madua, why is this bush burning? Why isn't it burning up? Like a curiosity standpoint. Is, I think, something that you could also apply to the Amidah, right? I'm not coming in for battle. I'm not even necessarily coming in for love or for supplication. I just have some wonderings, you know, madua. And this is, of course, the, you know, one of the great characteristics of Moshe as highlighted by the Midrash. Vayar Adonai kisar lirot. We read in the next set of psukim, God saw kisar lirot, that Moses turned aside. What does it mean that God saw that Moses turned aside? Meaning, kevan she hibit bo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, amar na'e ze lirot et Yisrael. Because he was the one who bothers to look, he's the one who's going to be the ro'eh, the shepherd for Israel, or in the Tanchuma's version, amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nitzta'arta lirot, you were troubled enough to see, Chayecha Shagale Alecha. I will reveal myself through you. Right? You're the one who's going to carry forth my presence. What merited me to you probably heard the Midrash of Moshe chasing after the little sheep, and that's, you know, which is Midrash, and that's the thing that allows God to reveal God's self on Sinai. But here it's a little bit different, which is to say, Moshe does do an activity on Har Elohim that gets God to reveal God's self, but it's not the care for the runaway sheep so much as the, you had a question and you followed up on your curiosity, madua, that allowed you to turn aside. Another midrash, or I don't know if it's a midrash or interpretation, that the burning bush was burning for many, many ages, but nobody had bothered to look. Okay, so up until this point, we've only really had the stepping forward, and just to your halacha question that you raised at the beginning, like, so there is, and you mentioned this is like a practice that you had seen, if you ever use My People's Prayer Book, the multi-volume that Larry Hoffman edited, so if you read the halacha commentary in there, which was written by Danny Landes, he says, without any sourcing, he says, well, you put one word of Hashem Sfatai Tiftach Ufi Agiti Latecha, to each of the steps, and it's step back and step forward. And I would say that's how I was taught to do it when growing up. And so, but I have not seen that anywhere. And in fact, the basic approach you see already, at least in Shacharit, Tilot Le'el Elyon, when you stand up, that if you look at the Koran Sidur, it has an instruction to take your three steps back then. So you're well before the Amida when you take your three steps back. And then Hashem Sfatai Tiftach Ufi Agiti Latecha, either you do not say them when you step forward. This gets to a text we'll see in a second. Either Hashem Sfatai Tiftach is part of your Amida, and therefore you already have to have your feet done when you start saying Hashem Sfatai Tiftach, or you can say it while you're stepping, but it's not one word per step. So I emailed Danny, who I have speaker from. I was like, Rav Landy, he's like, where is the source of this? And then he quoted me like his grandfather. You know, who is was, you know, the what is it, the grandfather's name? Anyways, he's an actual, like, Tzvi Pesach Frank. So he's like a serious posek in Yerushalayim, you know. But it's not like the standard practice, which ended up becoming what I see in a lot of communities today, is correlating the verse to the words. The verse long precedes the stepping at the beginning. And so it makes sense that it's not always been together. And then the Maharil, the one, so the what you see in the Koran of take your steps back earlier, before, long before Tzur Yisrael. So the Maharil, who's 14th century Ashkenaz, he's already the one who's telling you to do that. So you got legs to stand on for either practice, but older legs for the Maharil than Danny Landy's grandfather. But you have both of those. Now, the idea that you also, you might not even take any steps back at all. You might just take your steps forward. Because why do you have to take your steps to take your steps forward? Take back to go forward. But there is a tradition that there is something about taking the steps back to take your steps forward from the Ben Ish Chai. Okay, so he's also relatively recent, 19th century. But I like this because it also brings back the Sinai moment. And I think as an image, it's very powerful. So if one stands to say the Amidah in the place where he was sitting, he should be careful to step back before him three steps and then return to his place to pray. That is to say, if you have enough room where you can go somewhere else to say your Amidah, not where you were davening up until now, fine. But if you're going to be in the place where you have been davening and that's where you're going to say your Amidah, make sure to take three steps back and go back to that same place. You can't just stand up and take your three steps forward, according to Ben Ish Chai, because if one is sitting in a place different from the place he will stand and pray, he should go first to the place that he intends to pray and then walk back three steps and return to the place where he will stand to pray. And there is a great secret power in stepping back three steps before he begins to pray. Diyesh sod bazeh. There's a sod, there's a secret in doing this stepping back before you step forward. I'm not going to tell you that. It's a sod, okay? But I'm going to tell al pi apshat, according to the simple explanation, the surface explanation, this is related to it's zecher leotam gimel milin shechazru Yisrael lachorehen b'ma'amad har Sinai v'chazru v'nitkarvu. Right? You have in the Midrash, when God speaks the, like, Anochi Adonai Elohecha, and what does Israel react to from that? They are blown back, right? And, you know, the measuring here comes from various interpretations from Psalm 68, but basically they are blown back Shalosh Parsaot, which is, what is that, 12 meals, something like that. Three measures of far distance is how far Israel was blown back when God spoke the Ten Commandments. But they came back. Chazru v'nit karvu. So what I like to think about were the stepping back, as opposed to just like, well, I can't step forward because I'll run into the pew. I'm going to step back, but don't you run into the back pew? So it's like, you know, I'm going to take my steps. I'm going to end up exactly where I was. I could have just stood here, but I'm going to take my steps back and then take my steps back forward because I'm sort of embodying that experience of revelation where it was so overwhelming that I got blown back with all the other Israelites, but then I came back closer, right? And that's a way of thinking about the otherwise somewhat futile exercise of stepping back simply to land back where you were in the first place. But you were like, I'm having this intense, overwhelming, I can't really be here, but I'm coming back. Okay, so just to close, let's look at Hashem Sfatai Tivach on the last page. So you know this from the Bavli, it's also in the Yerushalmi, that Rabbi Yossi says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Lifnei tfilato hu omer, Adonai svatai tiftach ufi agid tilatecha. And the Bavli takes that and says, in the name of Rabbanan, not Rabbi Yochanan, says, why isn't Hashem svatai tiftach an interruption between Geula and Tfila? Right? This is a concern of the Bavli, which is to say, you're supposed to end Gaal Yisrael, of the blessings of Shema. You're also supposed to do it in Arvit, but we have a few interruptions there, like Ashkiveinu and Baruch Hashem Lelam and Kaddish. We'll leave that aside. Other than that, brag of that. So you're supposed to go right from Geula into Tfila, meaning the Amidah. So they ask, but what about Hashem Sfatai Titach? And it says in the Bavli, Ketefila Arichta Damya. This is actually an extension of the Amida, which if you're in team, finish your steps before you say Hashem Sfatai Titach. This is your text, because it is part of the Amida. It's Tefila Arichta. It's an extended, it's a long part of the Amida. And that is also the question of when you are repeating the Amida, you see people do this both ways. Do you say Hashem Sfatai Titach or do you not when you're repeating the Amida? Is that something that you only say as an individual, or are you supposed to say it when you are repeating the Amida? And if you're not on team, it's part of the Amida. There are other versions of this text in the Gemara that doesn't say Ki Tfila Arichta Damya, but rather Ki Geula Arichta Damya. It's actually an extension of Geula, which is the predecessor to the Amida, and therefore it's the end of that last section as opposed to the beginning of the Amida section, and you could say it when you're stepping because you're finishing up that version. So why would Rabbi Yochanan say, Hashem Sfatai Tiftach, Ufi Yagid Tehillatecha, besides forgetting a word, six words, so you could have six steps, which is nice, but you could have said Shema, also has six words, or any number of psukim. So, of course, the verse is taken from Psalm 51, and the larger context of Psalm 51 has, I think, two interesting points as it relates to the Amida. One is the header, the superscript for Psalm 51 is, this is the psalm that David recited, having been confronted by Nathan about the sin with Bathsheba, right? Which is essentially in the text, like in Shmuel Bet, David simply says, Chatati. Like, he admits guilt. I sinned. But this psalm is like, if, it's like the fan fiction version, if David said more than just Chatati, what might David have said? And that's this psalm. So there is an orientation to like coming to the Amida with a sense of admission of guilt, which not all of us every day have committed the crime of sleeping with Bathsheba, who was married to Uriah, as you recall, and then sending Uriah off to his death. But if you sort of getting to the humility, the Moshe Anav aspect, it's like, I'm not coming to my Amida with my I demand justice hat on, though I might, but I'm coming to the Amida with my Hatati hat on, and I have to get that out of the way before I can even open my lips at all, you know, before you. So that's one orientation you might think about with that pasuk. And then if you read you can read the whole psalm. I think it's actually worth thinking about holding that in light of the Amida. But if you just look at the verses that surround Adonai Sfatai Tzidach V'Yigeh Tehillatecha, so verse 16, Hatzileni Midamim, that's I have committed an offense, so save me from that guilt. And then Hashem Sfatai Tiftach. And then, Ki lo tachpot zevach, you don't want sacrifice, and ve'etena ola lo tirtzeh, and that I would give a burnt offering, that's not what you actually want. Rather, what's the sacrifice you want? Zivche Elohim ruach nishbara, lev nishbar v'nidkeh, Elohim lo tivseh. God might reject your sacrifice, but a broken and contrite heart, God never rejects. So that's another way of thinking about how you might approach the Amida, which is to say, if you are not in the emotional state of Ruach Nishbara, you might be missing an opportunity for what we're about to do here, if you're just sort of like cordoned off from the emotional side of what it means to say the Amida. However, if you are leading with your Ruach Nishbara, God will never reject you. And so the Hashem Sfatai Tiftach, which is a request for God to help you speak in the Amida, like how could I ever pray before God? But it's also like the reason why you can speak, or the reason why God won't reject your words, is because of the broken spirit that you bring to that moment, which is another way of thinking about how we might enter into the space of the Amida. And, you know, for the rabbis, like, the verses were often just a beginning, like, were followed by an ellipsis. Like, you know what follows. And so it might have been understood that, of course, you understand that the Amida is the substitute for the Zevach. And the way the Zevach today is going to be accepted is if you do it in the format of a Ruach Nishbara and a Lev Nishbar. So that's another way you might enter the Amida. All right, nice to learn with all of you.
Thank you so much.
Go off.